Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today and where we think the world is going, and we have a pretty unique perspective on that. We believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention, and we demonstrate that by doing things like, taking a couple hours and showing how to solve all the world's problems, that sort of thing. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me, as always, is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. I'm, as I had mentioned in our email before the show started, I'm in Las Vegas this weekend. I've just started the annual... I don't call it Hell Week, but probably the most intense week of the year for Sybase employees. This is TechWave. Our annual user conference is going on this week, so I've been working up to it over the last couple of weeks, which is why my blogging has been a little on the light side. And now I'm actually here. I have worked all day today and on setting some things up, and it's just got a really intense week coming up. Really excited about it. Really looking forward to it, and going to be really glad when it's over at the end of this week. So,
well, and as attorneys, we have like continuing legal education. Is that what this amounts to?
Absolutely, yeah. For people who use Sybase software, for our database administrators and developers who use Power Builder, and hey, I'm actually talking some Sybase here. I should get compensated for this. But yeah, they come and it's largely training, but we also have an exhibit floor. Where our partners and where we show our what we're doing with products right now. We have customer advisory boards, focus groups, hospitality suites. So it's, you know, every bit of interaction you can have with the customers and partners that you fit into a week, you make it all happen during this week.
Y'all picked an interesting place to have it. Las Vegas is a great place, great town.
It's an exciting place.
I've not worn it out just yet. So,
well, we've had it here many times. We've had it in Orlando a number of times. We used to have it in San Diego, and I always enjoyed getting down to San Diego. But lately, we've been having it in Las Vegas, and that does seem. One thing I've observed, being in marketing and doing a lot of trade shows and conferences and things, is you never have a hard time getting people to come to Las Vegas. They always show up, so that's kind of the good side. So anyway, that's what's new with me. What's going on with you?
Oh, not much. Just actually having a relatively uneventful week this week. I got to see a great movie yesterday. Now this is one that's on DVD. It's Kingdom of Heaven, but I saw the director's cut. And have you seen the theatrical cut or the director's cut yet?
I saw that in the cinema, and I've seen it subsequently on TV at least once. I enjoyed that movie quite a bit. I thought it was well made.
Word is, and I've not ever seen the theatrical cut. I just saw the rather lengthy director's cut last night. Word is that it's a completely different movie, just about. It's a different experience. It adds a lot of depth in the director's cut. And it was... I thought it was outstanding. I thought it was a great movie, and I can't believe I had not seen it in one form or another before, but that was the first time for me, and I highly recommend it. It's very political. This is a movie. It has political statements to make, and not all of which I agree with, but it's a movie about the Crusades, and obviously the conflict in this movie is between Christians and Muslims. And, it makes some political statements, not all of which I agree with, but I thought it was outstanding the way it was done and how well it was done, and so I'd recommend it to anybody.
I thought it was really well made. I think that it's a mistake to transpose the politics of the crusade, to read them in the politics of the crusades too heavily into the politics of what's happening in the world today. That would be my only. And I don't know if that's exactly what Ridley Scott was doing. I don't know if he was saying this is a definitive statement about the Middle East today. Maybe that is what he was doing. Although you definitely see the parallels, and I think you see major differences too between the way things were there at that time and the way they are today. But I just thought it was a really cool movie, and it dealt with some pretty complex stuff and a very fascinating period of history, and pulled it all off in a really good way. I'm kind of a big Ridley Scott fan anyway. He makes
he absolutely good director. And the other thing I'm excited about is coming up on Tuesday. Lonesome Dove is going to be out for the first time on Blu-ray, and they're doing also a new DVD release that will, for the first time, have a theatrical aspect ratio for Lonesome Dove and 5.1 surround sound. So whether you want to get it on DVD or Blu-ray, there'll be a new version of Lonesome Dove out on Tuesday, and I'm excited about that.
Well, you know, we can make the case that Kingdom of Heaven is connected to the Speculus, because we were talking about terrorism and, you know, relations with the Arab world and all that kind of stuff on the program last week. To talk Lonesome Dove on this show, I think we have to default to the old, because it's our hour and we can talk about whatever we want to get to that. But you know who's a big Lonesome Dove fan?
That's rude behavior in a man. Won't tolerate it.
That, of course, was Woodrow, a pipe man.
Yeah, you jumped the gun on that, because I was just about to bring on our chat host Michael Darling and ask him if he didn't have some rude comment he wanted to make about Lonesome Dove.
I have nothing rude to say about Lonesome Dove, although I did suggest in the chat that perhaps the thing to look for is, will the cows look any better in Blu-ray?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, these are going to be some beautiful cows, I tell you. Well, yeah, it was cows. I was thinking, was it horses? No, it was cows. So, for the most part, yeah.
Well, it's a cool movie. Lonesome Dove is just one of the, I mean, it really captures the feel of the old, I mean, I don't know, I wasn't there, but it captures what I like to think it was like. You know, it's a real nostalgic kind of a story. These guys on this big cattle drive up to Montana, they sort of represent one era of the West, and there's this other kind of era that's sort of setting in, and the two don't go together that well. I think it's a really neat story.
I've got a trivia question for both you and Michael, Phil, and I want to see if y'all can get it. Lonesome Dove, of course, won the Pulitzer Prize. It was a novel, and then it was turned into a miniseries that most people have seen did not bother to read the novel. But before it was a novel, it started life as something else, and it was a movie script, and it was going to be a normal theatrical length movie. And it was being written with two actors in mind to play Woodrow and Gus. Can you name those actors?
Wow.
Is Jodie Foster one of them?
No.
I'm going to say, okay, well, it's just hard to imagine anybody other than Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall playing those two parts. But
how long ago was it written?
Let's say it was in development in the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, John Wayne was still alive. He'd have been awesome.
Yeah. That's one. Who was
John Wayne and...
Who's going to be the other?
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart, you got it. You got it.
There it is.
Very good.
Get back together.
Henry Fonda, but...
Yeah. Well, Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart made movies together, but I'm trying to think, other than The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, I think that... John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart never had a movie together, did they, other than that one?
Except for that one, which is the only one they needed to make together.
Well, there you go.
That was awesome, wasn't it? That was a great movie. But, yeah, it would have been cool to see an early version of Lonesome Dove with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne. But you're right. You know, Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall own those roles now, though.
But let me just make this into a Speculus discussion and say, one day when we have access to information in parallel universes, we will be able to watch that movie, and that would be very cool.
Hey, George Lucas has been wanting to make movies without actors and just use the virtual actors for a long time. If he ever pulls it off, that'd be the first one to do.
Yeah, you just pay the estates of those actors, you know.
That's another possibility, is we could have computer-generated John Wayne, who would know the difference anyway, and computer-generated Jimmy Stewart together, making a brand new movie. So two possibilities for how we can one day see that film. We don't have to be wistful about it. Okay, well, I'm going to shift gears real fast because we've got an awful lot of ground to cover here this evening. And I mentioned in the opening that we're looking to solve half of the world's problems tonight. We solved one half last week, and we're solving another half this week. Now, the reason this came about, we thought we would we've been talking a lot about entertainment and very specific subjects on Fast Forward Radio over the last few weeks. We thought it would be fun to take on some big, challenging topics and talk, you know, seriously, if not to the final degree of detail, about how some of the biggest problems that the world is facing can be solved. So we took on last week. What were the problems that we solved last week?
We talked about crime, and we talked about the environment.
We talked poverty, I believe, was another one. And what else did we solve?
I'll just pull it up. Sorry, we didn't have it handy.
Something else.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Eliminate crime, abolish hunger and poverty, and end terrorism.
So, terrorism. That's right.
Yeah,
of course.
Terrorism
that's
was our third segment.
That's how Kingdom of Heaven relates to the program. So we had some good discussion about that, and we're very much looking for listeners to participate in this discussion because I think realistic enough to know that between the two of us and with Michael, the three of us, we're good for about 80% of solving the world's problems. But we need that other 20% from, you know, some other people to kick in. So what we did was I've sprung for a limited edition, one of a kind at this point, at the point that it's going to be produced, Fast Forward Radio coffee mug, which is going to be awarded to the caller, if somebody decides to call in, or the chat participant who gives the best idea for how to solve the world's problems. So we've got a good competition going. Last week, Harvey Espachillo, our good buddy, suggested desalinization of seawater as a means of ending poverty, which was excellent. And Matt, not to be outdone, Matt Doing, wrote in on the chat room and suggested some alternatives to kind of like lifestyle alternatives that might help people avoid going into terrorism. So we got a neck and neck race right now between those two guys for the coffee mug. Not sure really between the two of them who would get the mug, but we've still got these other three topics to get through tonight. So if either Harvey or Matt come in with additional ideas on top of the ones they've had, we might get a clear winner, or someone else might come through and say, "Hey, I've got the ultimate solution to disease," and they might end up with a coffee mug at this point. So it's
Phil, we also have another contributor who contributed with a comment to last week's show notes. So not live, but Philip, we should at least mention it. Her name is Leslie Kirshner, and she blogs at Stop and Consider. And the comment is, while it's hard to know all the causes and drop in crime observed in the 90s that you were discussing, I do think there are many types of crime will naturally decrease as technology of the future arises in a couple of key areas. And she goes into artificial intelligence and a couple of other things that we actually did kind of get into last week. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So I guess we will, since the program is recorded and more people, I think, listen to it in that form than listen to it live, we're going to have to go ahead and allow comments after the fact to be in the competition as well. So
yeah.
With that in mind, I guess we'll have to announce a final winner. For anyone who tuned in tonight hoping to find out who would win the coffee mug, I'm going to have to disappoint you and say that we'll actually announce the winner of the coffee mug, Wednesday?
Yeah, that'll be fun.
that'll give, you know, in case somebody wants to chime in with something really good, we'll give them time to do that. Just in the interest of fairness to all of our listeners, because if we don't have fairness to our listeners, what have we got, really? I mean,
that's right.
Well, solutions to all the world's problems, but, you know. In fact, speaking of which, let me just say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're getting ready to solve three of the world's biggest problems. And if you have some ideas on that, would like to share, you can give us a call at 347-215-8972 or join us in our live online chat. Or if you're listening to this after the fact, please feel free to leave a comment on the blog. All right. So what's our first order of business to solve this evening, Stephen?
Cancer, infectious diseases, to include one of the big ones, dysentery. So
yeah, we listed dysentery because that one always gets overlooked, and yet that's the one that that probably kills, I believe, statistically kills more people than any other disease. We know about diseases.
You know,
I've like
heard
AIDS.
From another source it was malaria, but I think if you put malaria and dysentery together, two diseases we don't really think about in this country, you know that. If you put those two together, those for sure are much bigger than anything that we deal with here in this country on a regular basis.
That's absolutely right. In fact, malaria should be on the list.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not tragic that a lot of people die of cancer and heart disease and AIDS and diabetes and any of the other diseases that you might list. But we need to keep those
sheer
in mind.
Numbers. Yeah, yeah.
Because of the sheer numbers of people who are a victim of them. So. Do I take this one first, or do you have some thoughts?
I'd like to jump in on cancer.
Okay.
The big thing that you and I have been talking about here over the last year or so is cancer immunotherapy, and we got the idea to, you actually got the opportunity to visit with Dr. Zhuying Shui, is that his name?
Dr. Zhuying Shui. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and. He, of course, has been working on cancer immunotherapy. And what this is, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, but what this is you're actually taking a donation of cells from a healthy person's immune system and injecting them into a cancer patient. And the idea is that that will kill the cancer. There's very promising animal models, and now they're. My understanding also is that this summer they are doing human testing.
Yeah, we know that that Dr. Sweet is conducting his tests recently. I read about it on Brian Wang's blog not too long ago. That it is going on now. Human trials with his procedure. Just to back up just a little, his line of research actually came about. Accidentally through the discovery, he wasn't trying to discover this, the discovery of a mouse that could not be given cancer. He had found a strain of mice and bred a strain of mice that can't catch, not that there's a natural way to catch cancer, I suppose, but can't get cancer naturally, and no matter how much cancer you injected them with, they wouldn't get cancer. They wouldn't get sick. Their bodies would simply reject it. They had a natural immunity to virtually any kind of cancer. And this led him to think, well, if it's possible that there's a mouse that's super immune to cancer, there must be a corollary in the human population. So he starts looking for this level of immunity to cancer in human beings, and he is taking. I'm trying to think of the word. Is it lymphocytes?
That's right.
Yeah. Lymphocytes from the bloodstream. These are immune agents that apparently are very effective in some people at warding off cancer. He's taking those via a blood transfusion process. In vitro, he has demonstrated that these are from some people devastating against cancer. Now he's going to take that same technique and apply it to actual human subjects who have cancer. And we're hoping that this is going to show some tremendous results and that that some people who are currently being treated, actually not being treated, I believe when we spoke, he said that the parameters of the test were it would be people who have pretty much gotten to the end of their rope. So we're hoping to see new hope for people who basically were done being treated for cancer because there was nothing more that they could do via this treatment. So it's very exciting stuff.
And also, at the same time, another group of researchers, according to the UK Telegraph, doing almost the same thing. But in this case, what they did is they had a cancer patient, and they took cells from that cancer patient's own immune system. And apparently, you know, even a sick person has some ability to fight cancer within their own immune system, and they found the cells that do it, and they multiplied them in a petri dish until they had a whole bunch of them, a lot more than he was able to produce naturally, I guess, injected them back into him, and he's well. not sick any longer. And apparently this guy was far gone. And so it's a very similar thing to what Dr. Shui was working on. And so that's a very, very promising deal. And apparently it could be used for all kinds of cancer. So it's exciting.
Well, what I like about that is if you want to take this idea and extend it beyond cancer, you know, what about just making a part of routine treatment for people, just part of health maintenance, doing exactly that thing for all of us?
Yeah.
You know, what if we just started taking our immune systems and building them up very strong? One of the things Dr. Shui and I talked about was the fact that a similar treatment to what he's doing now for cancer might turn out to be effective against heart disease, might be effective against a number of other potential diseases. So if you start talking about let's eliminate disease in the world, building up human immunity, I think, would be a huge step in that direction, and allowing people's their own immune systems to become effective in fighting off cancer, fighting off other infectious diseases, I think would be one of two pillars an elimination of disease is going to require. I think the other pillar is something that we've already talked about. We talked about it last week. And I would explain it this way. You know, we talked about dysentery, malaria, and really, to a large extent, AIDS. You know, where these diseases are really profound in their effects on populations, where there's real devastation from these kinds of diseases. You know, what's the common factor in those countries?
Poverty, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there is a lack of infrastructure. And in the case of dysentery, you know, there's just a lack of the kind of hygiene that we have around drinking water that keeps us from getting it. You know, why aren't we always getting
dysentery,
anthrax, or yeah. I'm trying to think of that cholera, right? You don't hear big cholera outbreaks in the U.S. anymore. It's because we've put, or in Western Europe, or in most developed parts of Asia, it's because we've got infrastructure for keeping the water clean from those elements, by and large, and we've got food processing that's clean, that's sanitized against those things. So I think if you look at a trajectory of people dying from dysentery, people dying from malaria, people dying from a lot of these kinds of diseases, and economic development, you will see that as economies develop, deaths from those diseases are going to go down. So we work on poverty. We get back to Harvey's desalinization idea and some of the other ideas we talked about for addressing poverty, and that will prevent a lot of those kinds of diseases. Then you add to that, let's start really super strengthening the human immune system, and I think we're on to a world without disease.
The other thing that excites me about Dr. Shui's potential breakthrough is that, you know, there's not going to be the same kind of FDA process. You know, I mean, if you hear about some great blockbuster drug that might cure some disease or something, well, you can count on it having to go through trial after trial after trial before it's allowed to be released in this country, at least. But with this, all we're talking about is a blood transfusion. And so if it works, then, you know, it might be standard practice by this time next year. You know, it could be adopted very quickly.
It could. It doesn't have hurdles to overcome that a drug therapy would need to. And I'm thinking that probably what they did to that guy in the UK would be similar. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's building a culture out of his own body and putting it back in. There's still no manufacture of any drug involved there. So I would think that
it's a little bit like blood banking. You know, banking your own blood and then using it after surgery or something. It's very, very much the same process, and therefore not subject to the same kind of hurdles.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Cool. And any rate, I guess that would be the thing that excites me the most about where we're going with cancer.
Yeah, and again, I think it probably carries over into a lot of other areas. And then generally, I guess I put us on a two-legged stool. There probably is a third prong here, and Michael mentions it, which is nanobiotech. That in addition to I would say that building up human immunity and providing sufficient hygiene for people around the world, that there's probably just a level of technology that needs to be developed. You know, we've heard, it seems like every week you see a new breakthrough in terms of cancer being treated with nanoparticles or nanotechnology being looked at as a possible solution to heart disease, a possible solution to diabetes. I think as nanotechnology and biotechnology get closer to being convergent, and as we have technology that will be able to go in and actually rebuild cells at the molecular level, at that point, you truly have the ability to conquer disease as we know it. Because when we can go in and reconstitute, you know, disease tissue at the cellular level, at the molecular level, the disease has no quarter left, right? It's not a matter of it can outsmart our immune system anymore. It's not a matter of, well, it'll sneak back in through the drinking water or something like that. At that point, if we're fighting it at that level, it seems to me that that's as close to completely eliminating disease as we'll ever get.
Well, I have another thing on as far as infectious disease that excites me. There is a program, DARPA, our military is working on, called Unconventional Pathogen Countermeasures Program.
What a great name!
Yeah, well, all that. What it means is that the goal is quite simply amazing. The goal of the project is to create, super soldiers in a way that are resistant to all disease. And the object of the game here is to find out what disease has in common find the Achilles heels, and it might be just one thing that would keep that a whole family of diseases from being able to be to work within your body, and attack those diseases on that basis. And so that's about. And of course, obviously, I would hope that it would get into the larger population as well.
That's really interesting. So that is an actual attempt to implement kind of what I was describing theoretically. And what's interesting is it's coming from the military, and it has this kind of military feel to it. You know, I mean, this it's like we're rallying the forces that are going to go in and combat the disease, right? It's got this kind of even from the name of it that you gave. So it's not just in the realm of science fiction that we're seeing this kind of technology being applied to the general problem of human disease. I mean, they're looking at treating injury and disease in a very specific context. But per your point, this could be widely applied to the population.
Right. That's right. Also, I mean, at the same time that's going on within the military, we get this interesting article about how HIV, they may have found the Achilles heel for HIV. It's a uniquely clever virus, HIV is, and that's why it's so hard to combat. And what happens is the virus itself will mutate so that the body can't really, you know, just as the body gets to where it can fight HIV in one form, it shows up in another form, and it continues to make you sick and kills you. But there's the thing about HIV is that it has to keep one part of the virus stable in order to operate at all. And these two doctors down in Houston have come up, it's Dr. Paul and Dr. Miguel Escobar, in Houston, have found that part, and they believe they have found a way to exploit the weakness, and it's called an abzyme, which is related to the concept obviously of enzyme, but an abzyme is how they attack this thing, and not only does it kill. What it'll do is this abzyme will attack the virus, completely disable it, so it's inert, and then it'll go on and attack another virus.
Huh.
So it's not done after it attacks and kills one HIV virus within your body. It'll go and keep going and keep going until it kills it all and leaves it as an inert virus within your system. And so obviously, very excited about that and want to see that, how that develops.
So at this point, we're fighting fire with fire, it sounds like. I mean, this is this abzyme, is it a virus itself, or it sounds like it acts like a virus?
No, it is not a virus. What it is it just binds to and disables a certain instructional sequence that can't be that can't mutate. In order for the HIV to operate, it's got to have one portion of this instruction stable. It goes in and basically erases those instructions and then goes to the next virus and erases those instructions too.
So it is a virus, and it's
maybe
like a computer virus. You know what I mean? Biologically, it's not, but it's like a computer. It's like we're programming DNA with a computer virus, right?
Absolutely, and it was engineered. This is this abzyme was actually written in code, and then released into and they've got human test subjects that's already working in. So that's exciting.
That is extremely exciting. That's some great stuff. So we look forward to hearing more on that one. I just want to say to Will Brown, he had asked a question earlier, and yes, Will, that what you described as Brian's post is saying, that is exactly how Dr. Swee's methodology worked. And so if I didn't cover that adequately, I apologize to everyone listening. In fact, he is taking white blood cells from cancer-resistant individuals and injecting them into folks who have cancer. That's where the lymphocyte. I'm not sure it is lymphocytes. It might be called something else, but it's some aspect. It's something within the white blood cells. It's not just the cells, but it's something even more specific within them that's being transfused in. So clearly, a lot of very positive signs for the elimination of disease. That I mean, you know, Stephen, we didn't even really have to come up with anything here. All we had to do was talk about the great stuff that people are already doing. And it looks to me like, if not the total elimination of all disease, at least tremendous progress in a number of really important fronts is underway right now.
Well, my money is on intelligence. I mean, the thing is, viruses are able to act smart, but they're not really smart, you know. And we're operating at a different level than, you know, these viruses that are evolved to kill us or to maim us. And I just feel like that ultimately, you know, this has been a long haul, but ultimately, it's going to be conquered. And so, anyway, long term is looking bright.
It's looking very bright. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're solving the world's problems. We got two more to solve. If you've got some thoughts on how to help us do that, give us a call at 347-215-8972 or join us in our online chat. And we're now going to move on to, I think we're on to war now. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Ending war.
Okay.
Well,
now you got to go first on
that. Yeah, that's right. You get war.
You're just all over the place. Now, I've got this whole war thing figured out. I was talking with my wife about this list of problems that we were going to solve before the program last week. And I said, well, it's just, you know, it's outrageous what we're doing. We're talking about solving all the world's problems. She says, like what? And I said, well, like how to end war. And she goes, well, that's simple. Nuke them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think ultimately that might be a bit problematic.
Well, we're brainstorming here, so we don't want to throw anything off the table. So I guess, you know, a preemptive first strike against everybody, right? As an approach to ending war, I think you know, in addition to the huge moral problems with that suggestion, I don't know if she's able to listen tonight or not. But if you're listening, see, I told you I'd talk about this. I think the real problem is that assuming anybody's left, there's still a good chance they're going to fight with each other. That's the real problem. You can do away with an awful lot of the violence in the world by killing most of the population. But unfortunately, having taken that step forward, if you want to call it forward, having taken that horrible step, whoever's left, they're still going to be fighting each other, right? So
no doubt that's true. We got a caller. So let me
okay.
All right. Hello, you're on Fast Forward Radio.
Hi, this is Will Brown.
Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Welcome to the program, Will.
Well, thank you very much. Other than trying to solicit that elusive specialist link, the thing on war is interesting. As you know, at least Stephen knows, I write quite a bit on strategy, particularly Sun Tzu's writing on that.
Right.
And one of the things that I think is most people don't really take very well into consideration is that war is basically a failure of the normal human condition, or of practicing a normal human condition well, I think might be a way of putting it. It's conflict is intrinsic to human nature. Is this coming across at all well?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Fundamental strategy. All human beings are a unique individual position, and strategy is nothing more than positional advancement. That is, advancing your position or your association's positions, as a country, a business, whatever. It's all positional advancement. It's as simple and complex as a game of Go. And I'm not going to try and explain that here because I'm a terrible Go player, but it's not at all structured like the game of chess is, but it's basically just positional advancement. And if how you go about advancing your position over the interests of others, over your present day position, that's how we all get through life.
Let me check you on this, Will, because that's an interesting point. One of the old chestnuts you hear sometimes, and it's close enough to being true that you can almost say it, but it's not entirely true. But one of the things you hear is that democracies don't attack democracies, right? Have you ever heard that one? It's a kind of a, you know, they don't go to, so like we wouldn't go invade Canada and have a war with them, for example.
If that's
true, is it because if we're engaging in positional advancement against a country like Canada or Sweden or somebody like that, we're doing it in a different substrate than back in the days when we might have, you know, in the War of 1812, when we were actually having a shooting war? I guess the question is, can you advance your position using economic means or mimetic means or some other means and eliminate the let's go kill them so that we can have our way with the world kind of approach?
Well, okay, let's go kill them is the ultimate failure of all your other options.
Right.
So, yes, to answer your question in short, yes. I just read recently that Alaska's governor, I forget her name, Sarah Palin?
I think that's right, yeah.
She just signed legislation in Alaska that authorizes a gas pipeline or authorizes Alaska to pay a Canadian company to build a gas pipeline. So in Alaska's gas, which has been trapped because there's no way to get it out of the state, essentially, or out of the ground, head to a market, now be piped to America, to the lower 48. Sorry, Alaskans, you're Americans too. So that's an example of advancing Alaska's position, because their oil, their traditional oil income is declining as their oil fields are being pumped out. And their gas fields just essentially sat there because there was no option for them to get it to market. Well, now there's an option. There's an example of how you do that without actually going to war. They've advanced Alaska's position.
Yeah. And so, some arrangement was made with Canada, and they're going to bring it through Canada, but it didn't involve us having to shoot anybody, and Canada was probably enriched as well.
Oh, yeah. They get at least a $500 million subsidy to their pipeline building industry, if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there are lots of ways for strategy to offer options short of war, short of actual violence, but you're never going to get away from the potential for it, because all human interaction is based on that basic competition of personal advancement or associative, your family, all this. All of this is all variations on that same basic primary fundamental concept of positional advancement. And it can get extraordinarily complex, but the basic concept remains fundamental.
Well, it seems to me that that the growth of a like worldwide information infrastructure and a kind of a shared economy, kind of a global economy, provides lots more options for advancing a position than would have existed when you didn't have those things. You think about the Olympics coming up. And in so many ways, China is going to be advancing its position in a number of different places. Primarily, just one of its big ideas that it wants to get across to the world is, you know, we have really come of age, we are really important, we are really capable of doing things. You know, all these messages that they want to get across. There was a time when if a country wanted to get the point across to the rest of the world that they were a big deal, about the only way to do that would be to go in and take all their stuff, right, and flatten them out and tell them, from now on, you pay tribute to me. But now, arguably, China is going to be doing that over the next few weeks without a shot being fired. And, you know, does advancing position in the media age offer the opportunity to advance position peacefully?
Yes, but, you know, there's always qualifications to any of this. You can advance, you have more, we have, all have greater opportunity through the web or et cetera. Your China example with the Olympics is a good one in that China can promote its advancement, but it can't actually achieve its advancement without cooperation from somebody else. So the Olympics provides them with, you know, hosting the Olympics in Beijing provides them with a platform for achieving those sort of links. But again, China really can't do much outside of its own borders without the cooperative action of somebody else. So that's a good example of how you can achieve those links. And as you said, you know, the IT industry, it's generally the web. All this is great. All the knowledge we get from reading Brian Wang's website is all wonderful and helps us in deciding how we might choose to advance, but it doesn't necessarily provide us with the means to. That still relies on our direct, more historically pertinent opportunity.
So what do you make of – are you familiar with the research that shows that generally, in an evolutionary sense, human beings are less violent today than we were – in earlier eras, and that the trend has been for people to be less likely to die at the hands of their fellow human beings today than they were 100 years ago or 10,000 years ago, et cetera, and on back. Do you think that there is a component of we're evolving away from this, or and if so, how would that factor into to the general idea of how we find alternative means of advancing our positions?
Well, yeah, I'm generally familiar with what you're talking about. I'm no, like nobody's description, an expert on it. I would think that, you know, my own impression is that we are not genetically, you know, evolving away from that. We're all still as prone to individual, you know, acts of violence as we ever were. Societally, I think there are, you know, the society evolves as do individuals biologically, I would think. And I would think that the societal or social expectations we all have to inhibit our own urges to individual violence have increased over time. Is that...
Yeah, yeah.
Does that come across at all sensible?
Yeah, yeah. I agree completely.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's what we're talking about. I don't think that we've evolved as a species. Yeah, I think we've evolved as a civilization, right? We've evolved as a culture or a set of cultures away from violence. Yeah, I would agree that the humans who were much more likely to be murdered than we are 10,000 years ago or 50,000 years ago genetically aren't really all that different from us. But what's happened is it seems that we've developed in our thinking alternative approaches, which helps a lot. And then we've built this infrastructure, which provides a lot more choices too. And it seems that the more alternatives you have to settling conflicts via violence, the more likely you are to pick one that's not violence. Just because there's, if you want to look at it in economic terms, just because there's so much opportunity cost associated with doing things the violent way. If you can advance your position without having to sacrifice a whole generation of your nation's young men, then, you know, or young women, or, you know, half your population, whatever ends up happening, depending on whether you win or lose the particular war, you're just that much better off. You know, even if it's being done out of purely rational self-interest reasons, that seems to be the logical direction that humanity's heading.
It seems to me, Phil, that we our wars are becoming progressively less bloody in a way. I mean, we you know, World War II, we had, you know, I don't have any idea what our casualties were, but it was less in every progressive war since then, and now in Iraq, where are we at now? Is it
between 4,000 and 5,000?
Between 4,000 and 5,000 now, and you know, it seems that our tolerance for losing soldiers in wars is becoming less. But you know, and we expect to accomplish more with fewer deaths,
with fewer people killed. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this once a while back when you had been to a reenactment of a Civil War battle, and we noted that at that time. And I think this is still the case, that more people died in that Civil War battle than had died in the entire Iraq war up to that point.
Yeah.
And just the kind of difference in mindset and expectations around what, you know, what is an acceptable or what is a tolerable amount of violence, I think has completely changed for us as a society. And I think that's good. You know, that's really where you want to be heading, right? Is if people are going to die in the service of some cause, that's a form of, I don't know if it's inflation or deflation, I don't know how you look at it, but that is definitely the right direction to be moving in. If you're saying we want to accomplish more good with fewer people having to die as a result of advancing our position.
Sacrifice. That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
One thing I want to inject on this is that there's a growing expectation of our technological capability exceeding our previous demands or our previous expectations, so that we're becoming more and more less willing to accept the necessity for personal sacrifice, you know, death or injury due to, you know, mating the beach or whatever. The Civil War battle is a good example.
Right.
That we're expecting our technology to permit us to achieve our ends. This is an alternative way of advancing your position without actually having to sacrifice your life or someone else's. So that's becoming more and more a widespread expectation on people's parts, I think. And as more technology is exposed to other people around the world by U.S. Coast Guard operating off Nigeria, for example. I saw that recently in the news. Yeah, all sorts of examples of that. The U.S. Navy responding to, what was it, Brunei, when they had that typhoon last year, earlier
mm-hmm.
this year.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of example where there are technological alternatives if you'll cooperate with us to actually invading your country to save you. So
yeah.
The strategy offers all sorts of alternatives to the study of the arts of war, but ultimately you're going to have to, you know, people are going to have to believe in your capability on the basic premise of forcing your advancement before they're willing to, you know, more seriously consider the alternatives, I think. I wrote something about that just recently.
we'll link to it. Will, what's the title of your post?
Oh, Will There Be War? ? It's a play on Jerry Cornell's title. There Will Be War.
Will, we got to let you go because we got another call.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Appreciate
it. All right. Thanks a lot, Will. We appreciate that. And Stephen, before we introduce our next caller, let me just say this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're solving the world's problems. We're talking a little bit about how to solve war right now. And if you'd like to join the conversation, there's still time to give us a call, 347-215-8972, or join the online chat.
Hello, caller. Welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Well, I'm not a new caller. This is Michael. I got crashed out of the out of the chat and out of the call, so I just called back in, and I look like a new caller.
Okay, sorry about
that. Oh, that's
that.
So disappointing. We thought, now here comes the definitive answer to the, somebody
all
jumping the gun on the environment.
That's funny. Okay.
Okay, well, we're still glad to have you in any case, even though
Thank
it's a
you.
Little bit
I
of a
should,
letdown.
I should have jumped in when Will first started talking because I couldn't hear what he said about where he was blogging, but I Googled positional advancement, in quotes, and the name Will Brown and got four or five hits. One of them is Where There's a William, which is his blog where he just wrote Will There Be a War. So I put that up in the chat.
All right. Appreciate that.
Excellent. And we'll, of course, have a link to Will's blog in the show notes as well. Well, actually, I think that discussion got us to the two things that I would have said about ending war anyway, which is basically that economic development and technological advancement seem to give us alternatives that we want to adopt, and that as a culture we seem to shift away from it, that there just seems to be this inclination not to want to kill people or not to want to be killed if there are alternatives. So we get the alternatives via economic and technological development, and we take them, I guess, because basically there's a natural human desire to avoid death and killing if there are other things available for us. Did you have any other thoughts on that, Stephen?
Well, I think we got actually a three-legged stool. We got economic development, democratic development, free societies, and also education of the populace. And you have all three of those, then you're going to end up with a society that avoids war.
And at that point,
competes with other nations in different ways.
Right. Yeah, that advances its position via other means.
Right.
And at that point, it starts to sound an awful lot like the ideas we came up with for combating terrorism, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
There's an awful lot in common between the two. And in fact, we know that terrorism is a form of warfare. They call it asymmetrical warfare. And so I guess really we were talking about a particular kind last week, and now we're talking about the overall topic here this week, but that's okay. We're allowed to break it up that way. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think that those are the factors that really come into play. And when I talk about economic development, I should broaden that to include the idea that from my standpoint, economic development means a growing economy where markets are more or less free, and what follows that, or what seems to naturally follow that, is that individuals become more or less free, and that both of those things have to be in place. And yeah, I think people have to be educated. Those things all start falling into place, and suddenly you've got people in the world wanting to interact with other people in the world, not necessarily destroy or control or change other people in the world. That seems to be the big shift that we're looking for in order to make warfare go away.
Right.
Okay, well, we've just got a few minutes left, and this is last but not least, going to solve the environment. Stephen, go.
Okay. Clean up the environment. I think what we got hand in hand here is the energy problem and the environment problem. What we got to have, obviously, for any developed society, you need a lot of energy to power a society like that. But in the process of creating energy, you end up, sometimes making a mess. And obviously, how do we get past that? Well, there are forms of energy that are less dirty than others. Obviously, coal-fired power plants are really not one of the cleanest ways of making electricity, for example. Solar, wind, nuclear would all be cleaner. Natural gas is very clean when it's burned. So those are some possibilities as well. So, like I said, moving towards those types of power and things like, moving towards what we call the solar singularity, where solar actually becomes cheaper than grid power. As we move towards that, and once that's achieved, obviously that's a huge milestone there. So
absolutely, yeah. I think energy is the big component. I mean, it's the big thing that something has to be done about if we're really going to get serious about the environment. But there are other things too. You need. For there not to be industrial pollutants, you need to do something about landfill, about garbage, water pollution, those kinds of things. Largely solved problems in the U.S. and in most of the developed world, or at least most of the West, put it that way. Some parts of the developing world in the East have come along with tremendous infrastructure, and they're kind of getting caught up now on the idea of not polluting the water, what you want to put into the air, that kind of stuff. So I think energy is a piece of it, the big piece, because that's really where most of the pollution gets done. It's in the form of producing energy. But ultimately, we need technology that will that will produce goods without so much waste, and we need a means of making good use of our waste. Now, interestingly, energy brings us back to that in one way when we talk about things like cellulosic ethanol. When we say, hey, let's take all these grass clippings, let's take all this waste paper, and recycling is one thing you can do with some forms of waste, but there's no recycling of grass clippings. And I know we're supposed to compost, but I would, you know, I think if I composted all my grass clippings, I'd have about 8 feet of topsoil in my backyard. I don't know what I would do with it all. But I like the idea of taking that organic waste, taking any carbon-based waste that's coming, you know, that I would normally just throw away, and all of that becoming energy. That is one very straightforward way to have a much cleaner environment, because it's like we're kind of using it as we go at that point then. The other thing is we look, I think, ahead to nanotechnology providing the ability to go in and make use of resources that before we would have just discarded. I think that in the future, when we have technology of about the same level of advancement we're talking about going in and working on cells individually, you'll also be able to go in and take a landfill and say, this is a treasure trove. Look at all the resources that are available here in terms of metals, in terms of potential fuel, in terms of just, you know, a rep-rap dream come true. You know, you could build a whole city out of a landfill if you could get in there and make good use of the stuff that's in there. And
along those same lines, Phil, I mean, for example, CO2 being pumped into the atmosphere presently from things like a coal-burning plant. You know, the idea now is to we could take that CO2, and that's useful in the production of something like fuels for using algae. Algae needs concentrations of CO2 that are greater than what we can get out of the atmosphere easily. And so, why not have it take the smoke from a coal-burning power plant and use that CO2 to make fuel with algae. So it's just another example of using things that were formerly waste to our advantage.
Exactly right. Yeah. And you reach this point where you're not really producing much waste anymore, because just about everything that would be discarded has a use, and it gets put to that use. And once you've achieved that, and I'm talking about doing it by highly advanced technology, you achieve this ideal that others talk about achieving via renunciation of technology, which is true sustainability and a true constructive interaction with nature, which I don't think we can achieve with technology unless it's much more advanced than the technology that we have.
So I heard a saying when I was a kid. A gardener told me this one time. He said, a weed is just a plant that we have not yet found its use.
There you go. Yeah.
So, same thing. Any kind of waste ultimately could be a resource. Yeah.
All this trash could be resources, and we end up with sufficiently advanced technology in a world where there's simply no such thing as waste. Everything has a use, and everything gets put to that use. That's my solution to the environment. We didn't even get to obviously you can use that technology to clean up water, and down the road. I don't know if we had this on the list, but we can bring back habitats. We can bring back species that are on the verge of extinction, and ultimately, all of Jurassic Park. We can even bring back species that have been lost to extinction up to this point. It's all on the roadmap if we follow that level of technology. And yes, Michael, Dino Burgers may at some point in the very near future be on the menu. So
I've got just one more thought on the environment. In the May edition of the Wired magazine, they had a major article entitled "Inconvenient Truths: Get Ready to Rethink What It Means to Be Green," and they went through a multitude of green myths and debunked them. And one of them was urban living. You know, they said is not the dirty way to live. Urban living is the greenest possible way to live on this planet, is to live in a urban environment. And it's just a lot greener than driving 2.5 hours to work every day.
That's great. I'd like to see the link to that, because I think that what that speaks to is the idea that I'm getting at is a major philosophical shift that I think is about to occur. at least I hope it's in the process of occurring, which is that technology is not the enemy of green. Technology is the friend of green. And in fact, we're going to get green by advancing technology, not by trying to shut it down.
And for those who would disagree, I invite them to take a trip to to any developing country and compare, how dirty their environment is compared to ours.
Exactly.
Are the environment of any developed country in the world. Developed nations are cleaner by far than poor nations.
And that's because, like what we talk about, we have options. Once you get to a certain level of economic development, you've got options that you didn't have before. And one of those options
you can
that
afford
you have
to care. You can
yeah,
afford
is to
care.
Say, hey, you know what? We really shouldn't be messing up the forests. You know, we shouldn't be dumping pollutants in the water. We want to take care of that so that our kids can enjoy it too. And I think that is exactly the trend. Well, we're hitting hard on our time here, so I'm going to shift gears and say, what music did you find for us on here, the second of two parts in which we talked about how to solve all the world's problems?
The name of the song is Hello Morning, and the artist is Mutlu.
Mutlu.
M-U-T-L-U, Mutlu.
Mutlu, Hello Morning. Okay, that sounds like exactly the kind of song we'll be singing here once we've solved all the world's problems. So great stuff, Stephen. Looking forward to the show notes on that. Any final parting thoughts on solving all the world's problems?
Man, I thought we were this could have been a fiasco when we started this last week, but it's been very interesting.
It has, and I'm so grateful to our listeners for their thoughtful comments in the chat, for our callers, and for any comments that get left. We will be announcing the winner of the coveted coffee cup come Wednesday, but thank you all very much, and thanks, Michael, for keeping things going there in the chat room and to everyone in the chat.
Okay.
All right, and we will look forward to being with you all on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.
Hello morning, what you got for me today? My heart is breaking, won't spread my wings and fly away. Everybody's got somewhere to go. Knocking on my window. Everybody's got their place in life, and the coffee's dark as my dreams last night. I need some of your sweet sunshine. Hello morning, have mercy on me please. My heart is breaking. Bones and wash my face. A new day dawning and dreams are made with every step you take. Everybody wants to get away and sail into the sunset. Everybody lives with some regret. You get pulled down by the way. We're all slaves anyway. And I can sleep when I'm dead. So hello morning, have mercy on me please. My eyes are so bad. Just give me a chance. But there's no time. heart is breaking.